We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in you. We shall never surrender. We shall never surrender.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 46 of The Art of Surrender. And today I am joined by Stephen Astro Boy Urseg, who just won the main event of Eternal 60 against Cody Haddon on the weekend. Stephen, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I think you might have heard the episode that I just did before, and obviously in that episode I said that I was supporting Cody. So then I've reached out to you and started tail between. Hey, come on my podcast.
No, all good. Yeah,
no hard feelings, mate. You know how these things are. Very impressed with the fight from both of you guys. But yeah, I said it on the podcast, best fight I've ever seen on a regional circuit. And just in general, it's up there with one of the best I've ever seen as well. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you. It was definitely more scrappy than I expected it to be. And yeah, I'm glad everybody else liked it. I enjoyed the fight. Like, looking back at it, obviously there's things that I wish I did better and that sort of thing. But no, it was good fun. Good fun.
Yeah. Well, you say that, but then you come up against someone like Cody who doesn't make it easy for you to do the things you want to do, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he's very good. Like, no slouch in any position, and definitely made me earn whatever I had to. Yeah, earn the victory, I guess. Yeah,
yeah. We'll get deep in it, mate, because that's what I like to do. But so let's preface the conversation for people who are listening at home. So anyone who's wondering, Stephen, he's a 7-1 as a pro. He was 7-1 as an amateur as well. He is ranked 2 as a flyweight. He's currently the flyweight champion of Eternal MMA, and he's ranked number 2 in the flyweight division of across Australia and New Zealand. Though I do question that, and I think you should be ranked number 1, because the guy who is ranked number 1 is someone that you choked out not too long ago. So I don't know how that works, but is it about to
it's
be
a bit
updated?
Of a touchy subject. I have no idea. I was at a family lunch because I was number 1 after I beat him. And obviously I was very happy about that. And then I was at a family lunch, enjoying myself, having a drink. And somebody told me that he got put number 1. So I immediately stopped drinking. I was like ready to go home, go for a run. I was pissed, but it is what it is. Can't do anything about it.
Yeah. That's just how these things go. We never know who does the rankings. It's the same thing in the UFC, right? The fighters go, oh, fuck the rankings. And on top of that, ranked number 3 as the bantamweight champion across Australia and New Zealand. So, mate, you have built a little bit of a resume for yourself. I watched a couple of your fights and it's been exciting. You look like you can obviously fight everywhere. From what I think, is it your wrestling that's your base? Like, do you want to give us a little bit about your, I guess, your just your martial
background,
arts in general?
Sort of thing? Yeah. So I started in just like a traditional martial art. So it was a combination of like Muay Thai, boxing, a bit of jiu-jitsu, all that sort of stuff, all into one thing. And then from there I sort of started jiu-jitsu, and then I did a little bit more Muay Thai and stuff like that. But it's been very recent that I've started wrestling, really.
Really?
Pretty recent. I've obviously taken it pretty seriously, because most of the times I've lost fights because I got out wrestled, and if you want to be the best in the world, you can't really have those weaknesses. So jiu-jitsu and striking I probably started at the same time. And then wrestling has been sort of more three years, I guess. But I hit it pretty hard to sort of make it a strength.
Yeah, right. So are you doing your wrestling, from what I can see, at Gladiator?
Yeah. So Alan Landy is the head coach there. You've got Yasha as the assistant coach, and heaps of good guys there. Like, I can't see there being any other wrestling gym in Australia that's to the same level. Like, we went to nationals and came away with 3 national champions, and gym's great there.
There you go. So it's obviously helped your career, and from the fight on the weekend, it looked like the wrestling was probably the one area where you had the edge that showed, and in the end, probably is what got you the win, right?
Yeah, 100%. It was like a get out of jail free card. Like, got tired, getting beat up on the feet, couldn't keep him down, or at least I can keep getting him down. So
yeah, There you go. So if we can, before we we'll talk about your jiu-jitsu journey, well, you just your martial arts in general, starting out at a young age and all that sort of stuff. But before we do, let's just stay with the fight for a little bit.
Yep.
So I know there's a backstory, right? Was it you or Cody who was scheduled to fight? And like, how did the fight come about? Because I'm pretty sure the fight you did have got cancelled, right? Which was to defend the strap. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I was supposed to fight Paul Loger. To defend the strap. So that was scheduled for 5 rounds, obviously. And about 3 or 4 weeks out, I can't remember exactly, I heard that he had injured himself. I was like looking for opponents. They couldn't really find anybody. They called all the other flyweights and they were either hurt or busy or whatever the problem was. Mm. And sort of Ben just sort of mentioned off the cuff, like, oh, what do you think about Cody? And I asked what weight, and he said bantamweight. I was like, I don't know, to be honest. So I sort of went home, thought about it, talked to Mr. Wilkes and my dad and everything. And sort of came away, went, you know what? He's really good. It's going to be a good fight. So we messaged Ben from there, asked for the fight. And I think Cody was training the whole time anyway. Like, even though he didn't have an opponent, he's sort of been, like, even the last Eternal, he had nobody scheduled. In the last week, all of a sudden, they gave him a fight.
Mm.
So I think he's training just in case anyway. So it's sort of late notice for both of us, but we're always both pretty fit, I imagine.
Yeah, and like, Cody Haddon is, you know, someone who's taken it seriously and wants to make a career out of this, right? And I've seen him. I watched his fight against Mark Famolari live in Perth, and he won that, obviously, and that was a great performance. Also, a common opponent that you've had. You mentioned Paul Loger, you were scheduled to fight. You already had versed him previously and got a KO in the first round. I watched that just before this podcast, and that was another good performance as well. So. Mate, what's the story? Are you just going around and just fighting all the flyweights, trying to fight them a second time? What are you trying to achieve here?
Well, yeah, I just need fights. Like, if I want to get to the UFC, obviously that's my goal. I want to be world champion. I want to be ultimately the best guy to ever do it. And to get to the UFC, I need to show them something, right? Like, I need to fight whoever the best guy is and prove that I'm the best guy in Australia. And then so when they do finally come, they're like, oh, well, who's at flyweight or who's at bantamweight? Who can we get from Australia? It's like, well, this Steve kid, he's beaten everybody. That's sort of what I was trying to do.
Well, that's sort of what happened with, I think, Josh Coolabau as well before he got in.
Yeah, well, he was a dual champion, right? So he fought at featherweight and lightweight, I think.
Yeah,
he'd won a bunch. Which is obviously very impressive.
Diamondback, yeah, so. Hex, Eternal, I think. Maybe Eternal, but yeah.
I'm not sure about the Eternal one, but he definitely won a lot of titles in a few organizations, and I was sort of looking to do a very similar thing, except I wanted to beat all the guys, but on Eternal, because I think they're the best promotion in Australia.
Yeah, I think you're right. I noticed that I think your last 5 fights have been in Eternal, and the 2 fights before that were Hex, and both of those promotions are known for breeding fighters who can make it to the UFC, like breeding ground for the UFC. I think where we're at right now, like, Eternal's the place to be. And even looking back at some of your earlier fights tonight, I was talking about the production quality in the podcast I just did and how great it is. Obviously, they're working in conjunction with the UFC Fight Pass and things like that. So if you're fighting for them, you're definitely going to be noticed by those guys. So they should
100%
should be able to get you to where you want to go, right? All you need to do is show up and keep winning.
Yeah, exactly. And it's in their best interest to have give me fights or give whoever fights and have us keep winning, because it looks great for Eternal too. Like, the more people that come from Eternal to the UFC shows how high quality their event is. Yeah. So it's in everybody's best interest.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. I think Ben Vickers runs a pretty good ship over there. And then, of course, the guy on the East Coast who I'm not sure what his name is. I do apologize. But
Cam O'Neill.
What I mean. Yeah. So let's talk about the fight specifically. Obviously, do you just want to talk about sort of the transition of the fight? Because I know at the end of the first round there, I think with about 30 seconds to go, you sunk in a rear naked choke and it looked like the fight was going to be over. And I want to just get, you had back control for about a minute prior to that as well. So like, what was your mindset like in the fight? Just talk me through it, and then getting to his back, then getting the choke, and just what you were thinking in those moments. Did you think you had it
won? So
Yeah,
I definitely did. So in the first round, I didn't really know what to expect from his striking mostly. Again, I was pretty confident in the wrestling that I'd have the advantage. And then jiu-jitsu, I wasn't sure who would be better there. But I thought if I'm on top, it's going to be really hard for him to do or submit me from there for sure. But I thought I'd definitely have the advantage if I'm on top. So I wanted to sort of feel out the striking, get a gauge of what he was trying to do. So when I do start setting up my shots, I'm a little bit safer and I can be more educated with how I'm actually getting to the takedown. I was surprised, like he's got good stand-up, but it did seem like he was a bit, not rushed, but he didn't seem like he was like aiming. I think he had a pretty solid game plan, like a pretty ironed out game plan. I think he was trying to like lead me onto his left hook. And so I don't think he was necessarily worrying about the first few strikes or aiming the first, like the strikes. I think he was just trying to get me there and hoping I was there. I felt like I did a pretty good job avoiding that to start with. And then, yeah, I saw he was about to set up a leg kick. I took him down. He got up really well. That was probably the most impressed part about his whole performance was how well he was able to get up. I really did not expect him to be able to get up that well. And something I'll definitely have to be working on in the future. So, yeah, I took him down. He got up and I eventually got him down again. He turned in a weird way, which gave me his back. And I got the hooks in. I knew I had a minute left. And he was fighting the hands really well, so I was trying not to rush. But he turned in a weird way where I was able to actually flatten him out. So it's like they call it like press the chicken or whatever. You get them like flat on their belly, you extend them with your hips, and then you can start throwing strikes and stuff.
Yeah, anyone who knows, if you have your hips parallel to the floor and you get flattened out, it's fucking difficult to escape from, especially in jiu-jitsu and then in MMA where there's strikes involved as well. Like you see a lot of people get finished once it's in that spot.
Yeah, so I got him there and I started to strike. And I felt like he started to come back out of it. And so as he came out, I slipped the choke in and I'm pretty disappointed with this. I think I rushed the lock. So rather than like in jiu-jitsu, you're always trying to get the hand, the non-choking hand behind the back of the head. With the gloves, it's way harder to do just because there's a lot of thickness between the bicep and then hard to get behind the head. So you have to like weasel in a bit more and just the fact that it was a big fight and all that sort of stuff, I sort of just stuck it next to his head and rushed it, hoping that he wouldn't fight the top hand. And obviously he's pretty good. So he fought the top hand off, which made me go palm to palm. And even then I thought it was super tight. I think from palm to palm, I had like 15 seconds left and it was slightly on his chin. So I was like, I'm going to rip this. Like if he's not going to tap for the pain, which I didn't think he would, it's going to slip under eventually. So I ripped it. And I got under his chin and I could feel how tight it was. I heard him gargling and I heard the breathing stop. And then he slipped my bottom hook. And after he slipped the bottom hook, he turned in the non-choke side. I lost the choke completely. And I thought I had it. And when he slipped the hook, I knew I couldn't finish it anymore. And I was like, okay, next round. So I went back to my corner.
Yeah. And he got up and I think he thought, he thought the fight got stopped and he's like, I didn't tap.
I didn't notice that at the time.
He didn't tap. And obviously the referees said, nah, mate, end of the round, go to your corner.
Yeah.
So he did.
Yeah.
What were you thinking walking back? Were you just like, what the fuck, man? Like, how can I finish this kid? Like, what was going on your mind? Were you frustrated?
Honestly.
Just have to let it
go? No, I wasn't frustrated. No, I definitely let it go. I was thinking, okay, he's tough. He's not just going to give up. Whatever I do, I'm going to have to make him go out, I thought, to be honest. I've been in that position a few times where you have something right at the end of the round and it doesn't happen, but like dwelling on it is pointless. Like there's nothing you can do about it now. Just move on, get to the next round. I thought that'd be in his head now. So I've got his back. I almost choked you. In my head, I'm thinking, well, he doesn't want to go to the ground anymore. But I sort of sat down and my coach goes, how are your arms? And I went, nah, they're fine. Don't worry about it. And I went to like try to make a fist because I had my arms on his shoulders. And I tried to make a fist and I honestly was struggling to make a fist. My forearms, my biceps were that gas. And I went, oh, no, this is going to be a struggle. And
did you tell your coach at that point or not?
Nah, I didn't tell him at that point. I was just like, I got to shake him out. It'll be fine. No, I didn't think there was any benefit to telling him, look, I have no arms. Like, there's nothing he can do about it. I got him to rub my arms, got up, move on. But yeah, so I went out and I was like, okay, let's see how bad it really is. And I threw my first punch. I went, oh my God, that was so slow. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do this round. I gotta get a takedown is what I thought. I thought I just need to get him down. I can rest my arms once I'm there. And then third round, I'll be sweet. I can get back to work. And yeah, again, credit to him. Not only was it hard to take him down, he started putting the pressure on and he got up when I did get him down. And yeah, I was the whole round, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this fight. This is rough, but keep plodding along.
Were you worrying that you weren't going to make the distance, or what were you thinking? Just that it was going to be a real challenge, or did you have doubt yourself?
You always doubt yourself in those moments. So I didn't feel cardio exhausted. Like my cardio felt okay. And that's why I think I was still able to keep going.
Mm.
But my arms were gassed. And I was thinking, I was down myself the whole time. I was like, well, I don't know if I can even make it to the end. He might be able to, like, if he gets a good position, can I fend him off? Like, I can't get my hand. All these thoughts go through your head. And
body's just fucking in autopilot, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So, so it's just a matter of eventually, like, sort of like talking yourself out of it. Like, nah, like, you're the man. Like, whatever you need to tell yourself, like, you're fit. You're going to find a way. You have to find a way. Like, you can't just go out because your arms are tired. That's pathetic. You have to find a way to win this fight. And so, yeah, just keeping a clear head was really important that round. He landed, a lot of strikes that round. I think I should have started going to my kicks and stuff a little bit more because, again, my legs weren't tired. It was my arms. So if I could have used my teeth to keep the distance, start getting on my bike a little bit, be a bit smarter, but I think I got a little bit like, no, I need to get the takedown so bad and I can't take a backward step, like, sort of thing. And it was a bit foolhardy, I guess.
Did he have you hurt at all in the second round?
Nah, it does look like that, I'll admit. But I did watch the fight, the part that really looks like I'm hurt, he throws, I think, four strikes and the last one really cracks me. And at the time, I could see he was tired and I was obviously tired. He threw the first strike and my hands came down and he threw a second one. I'm like, and his hand was down when he did it. I went, there's no way he's going to throw a third strike. And he threw a third one. I'm like, there's no way he's throwing a fourth one. And he threw a fourth one. I'm like, okay, far out. Just shoot. What are you doing, Steve? I was very lazy, like trying to get the rest moment. And he hit me. Like, he didn't hit soft or anything, but it didn't like rattle me or anything like that.
Yeah. And so even then with the wrestling, right, like you, there was so many chain wrestling combinations, him defending against the cage, you trying to take him down, him finding ways to get away from it. Then you did get a throw and then he managed to get to the top position and take your back. Yeah. And oh man. And then I thought when he was transitioning, had a real nice, like he threw his hip around the corner, like of the arm, and it looked like he was like attacking the arm, and I was like thinking, here we go. And at this point I was like, come on, Cody.
Yeah, yeah, I could imagine.
I'm not gonna lie to you, I was thinking gonna get you here. Then you survive that, and then you just get off, and then he shoots in and takes you down, and I'm just like, what the fuck is happening here? Like, it was insane. Man, it was insane.
The main, in that specific moment where he was stepping over and he had my arm sort of behind, all I was thinking was he cannot get to my back. I knew the armbar could be there, but I didn't feel like he was quite right for the armbar yet. But because he's finished everybody from the back that he's gotten, like, very quickly. So I was like, if he gets to my back, and especially how tired my arms are, I'm fucked. So I got to just make sure he does not get there. Like, that's why I think he ended up getting mount from it. Like, I was there, he couldn't get behind me, but I ended up falling on my back, got mount, and then I could shrimp and all that sort of stuff. But that was like a very do or die moment. If he got to my back, that could have been it there too. So.
Yeah, it's funny you say to the back as well, because the fight I was talking about, I think is his name, Shannon Ross. That was the one. That's the guy who's number one that I mentioned earlier, number one flyweight. And you actually choked him out with a rear naked choke in the first round after getting his back.
Yeah.
So, and then you had Cody's back in the first round at basically the same kind of time.
Yes.
And so in hindsight, he must have been thinking like, fuck.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and it's frustrating too, because I had, during that week specifically, I'd been doing the week before, I'd choked everybody from the back in training. Just, I don't know what it was, had a great week or something, but everybody's back I got, I choked. And so when I got his back in the fight, I was thinking, ah, here we go, like, put the 100% record to the test. And he did very well. Yeah, he did very well.
There you go. So second round, obviously, you give that to him.
Yeah, 100%.
Round one to you, round two to him. What was the conversation in the corner at the end of the second round?
Mr. Wilkes said the head kick's there, and that the main strike he's landing is the third and the fourth. So either get on your bike or shoot off his second strike, stuff like that.
Yeah. That's actually pretty good advice.
Yeah, that was pretty much the advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Mr. Wilkes, I value him very highly.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. And so coming out into the third round, at the start of the third round, what's going through your mind? Knowing it's going to peace, knowing you're feeling real tired.
What was going through my mind is I'm winning this fight. I'm going forward. You're going to have to take it from me. It was just, if I got knocked out, I got knocked out. If I got whatever, I'm coming forward the whole time. Like, I need to take this round. I can't just hope something goes my way. I got to make it happen, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I could see how tired he was. Like, the main thing that showed me how tired he was in that round was he started walking back and putting his back on the cage. Whereas the rest, like the first two rounds, even when it looked like he was starting to get tired, he was really pressing me. He was still throwing combos, all this sort of stuff. And in the third round, like, there's a few points where I'm walking forward and you see him walk back to the fence. And I was like, okay, I'm finishing over the top. Well, this is what's going through my mind anyway. I'm finishing over the top. Let's get him out of here, sort of thing. I thought the striking went pretty even that round too. Like, I did some things I don't usually do. Like, I threw the jumping knee, like a Hail Mary type thing, threw a switch kick, which landed in the fight when I landed the switch kick. Cause I knew he often throws his jab and his right hand comes down, especially when he's throwing the 1-2. So I thought, if I can parry the jab, throw the switch, the head kick's there. And I landed it in the fight. I thought, man, that landed sweet. How's he still standing? Watch it after the fight. I go, man, look how sloppy I am. I'm so tired. There's no power in the kick. That wouldn't knock down my auntie. But I threw a few things that, I don't usually throw, trying to sort of get him out of there. And then, again, he was super tough. I took him down a few times. Like, I took him down to side control. And he got up. I thought the fight was over there. That was like halfway through the round. I got him to side control. I was like, there's no way he's getting up now. He got the hand in, pressed the face away, got his hips out. Like, he did a really good job there.
And then even belly down, back to his feet.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
That amazing, was, man. It was amazing. It was all heart. Both of you guys, it was all heart.
Yeah. And that's what I said before the fight. It's like, this guy really believes he's the best guy in the world. Like, he's going to be the world champ. He can do all this stuff. There's no way I'm going to big dog him and just go, no, I'm the guy, and he's going to give up. There's no way it's going to happen. I had to go in there, and if I was going to choke him, I'd have to put him out. If I was going to finish him on the feet, I'd have to knock him out. Like, just knocking him down I would have had to knock him out because he would have been fighting the whole time, and there's no way he was going to give up because he was tired. I knew that. Mm.
And
those fights are fun.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. I don't know if they're fun to be in.
They're fun afterwards more so than anything.
Yeah. Well, and you need someone who can push you that hard to make that happen, right? Like, I'm telling a lot of other people you would have fought without that kind of a fight, they would have wilted and quit.
100%.
Like, you would have broken 100%. And like, I know you won the decision, take nothing away from you, but you didn't break him, you know? Like,
no, I didn't.
You didn't.
No.
And he didn't break you either. So that's a testament to how tough you both are. And I wouldn't be surprised if you guys end up fighting again later on, like maybe in the UFC at some point. But hopefully not, right? Because I don't know how do you feel about, obviously you got to fight all the local guys to get to where you want to go, and it's the same for everyone, right? But once you get to the UFC, would your preference be to just fight, you know, internationally against other people and kind of be comrades with the guys you kind of come up with? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
100%. Like, Australia is not like a huge place compared to the rest of the world, like as in population-wise. Mm. But I think especially once you're not like, you're not having to fight each other, you should become team, or at least help each other somewhere. Like, even if it's not every week, it's like, I go down there every 3 months and, doing a spar, Cody, yeah, sure, that'd be great, blah, blah, and help each other, like, bring Australian martial arts to a higher level, sort of try to, as Conor McGregor said, like, take over the UFC, like Australia taking over. That would be my preference. But obviously he has big dreams, I have big dreams. If it comes to the point where I'm in the UFC, I'm I've got the title, I'm fighting for the title, whatever it is, and he's in the UFC and he wants to challenge me for my spot, whatever it is, well, I'm not gonna say no. That is what it is. Like, sometimes you gotta,
yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it, man. Which is, I think that's a good way to look at it. I know a lot of the guys on the East Coast train together, and that's sort of like the unspoken rule is like, look, we don't want to fight each other, but if we're fighting for a title and we have to, so be it. We've all got dreams, right? Yeah. And you're all trying to achieve.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's some people do it really well where, like, obviously DC and Cain Velasquez did it great, where they were both at heavyweight and Cain was there first and he went, look, I'm going to go down to light heavy and fight there. I can make the weight anyway. And they sort of stay away from each other. But I mean, me and Cody aren't in the same gym or anything like that either. So, I mean, I wouldn't expect him to move out of a division because I'm there.
Yeah, sure.
At that level. And obviously I wouldn't be moving because he came
to
a division that I'm in. So, yeah.
Understood. And so I mean, my thoughts on the fight were obviously like it was a round apiece going into the third. And I thought the third was up for grabs, like the whole way through. Yeah. As you said, you were backing him up a bit and he was tired and kind of, you said you wanted to press him. He was also, without you pressing him, kind of moving away a little bit. So it made it a little bit easier for you to press him. Did you feel that?
Yes, 100%. Definitely.
But I thought the third round, like all the way pretty much to that last minute where you got the takedown, I thought even though you'd backed him up, it was still very 50-50 and the judges, like, I have no idea how they would have called that. There was a couple of decisions earlier in the night that were a little bit suspect as well. And then so I thought it was anyone's fight. And then that last minute, that one takedown, I think it won you the fight. That was at the last minute. You shot the takedown, got the takedown, and then held him down.
The thing is, I didn't even shoot the takedown. I sort of entered into like a sloppy 50-50. And I think he went to take me down and I just rode it well and sort of got behind him. Yeah.
I slipped
my hips around. Yeah. So it was sort of like a lucky, not completely lucky, obviously, but it is a lucky break. That could have gone his way too. He goes, I don't slip my hips around. He's on top. He wins around. So. It was very up for grabs that whole time. Yeah.
Well, you're fighting for millimeters, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
And like even then when you had his back and you had the control and stuff, as I said, there was no quit. Like he even gave the mount because he couldn't get you off his back. He gave up the mount to try and escape. And then even when you were throwing punches, like he was putting his arms up and stuff to fend you off. And it wasn't like, you know, I think he knew the threat was there, but he's like, I'm not fucking just going to lay under mount and stay safe. He was trying to get up the whole time.
There was like 10 seconds left, he never resigned himself to being like the fight being over. Like he went, I'm getting out either way. And he didn't, but he could have. Like he did it multiple times during the rest of the round. So, yeah.
Well, man, congratulations. It was an amazing fight. I know, like, social media in Perth, like the Eternal page and just everything like that blew up. The entire card was sick. What did you think about the co-main before that? Did you watch the Rod Costa fight, or have you gone back and seen it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did watch it. I had somebody with the stream up on their phone while I was out the back warming up. I was very impressed. Like, I know how good Rod's jiu-jitsu is. And I know how hard he's working at all facets of his game. So to see him go out there against somebody who I thought was pretty good and drop him, what, he dropped him three times and then knocked him out. I was very happy for him. I thought he did very well. And it would just make everybody a little bit more scared of the Rod Costa package.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, put him on notice. That lead left hook too. Like that was something sweet.
Yeah. No, it looked beautiful. Yeah.
Mm. So flyweight champion. You've gone up to bantamweight. You've beaten Cody, who I think was probably one of the hottest prospects out of Perth at the moment. And I mean, in Eternal, is it safe to say that he probably has the most hype behind him?
It's not even close.
He does? Is that right?
There's 100% he does. There were so many people. Jack Della might have just as much hype as him. But other than that, there was people that don't know fighting that were messaging, like my cousins going, oh, this Cody Haddon guy is really good. I heard that he's in the same division as your cousin and shit like that. It's like, they don't even watch fighting and they heard him. Like, it's hard not to be a little bit jealous, but at the same time, like, there's a reason why there's so much hype behind him. Like, he's finished everybody, and yeah, it's very impressive. And yeah,
very impressive. And even in a loss, man, like, I'm sure he's at home probably fucking heartbroken, I can imagine.
Yeah, of course.
Probably be difficult to deal with, but like, man, he showed up and performed extremely well too. And I mean, coming from me, it means nothing, but I'm excited. I'm excited to see what comes, man. Like, I don't think that it's a loss that ruins anything for him. He's still so young. Nah.
I think it honestly puts his stock up, to be honest. Like,
100%.
If he went out there and I finished him quick, yeah, sure, people are like, oh, well, he wasn't the real deal, blah, blah. But then to have that fight, people are like, oh, wow, I didn't realize Cody. Like, Cody, they thought Cody was good, and a lot of people were going, well, yeah, but he hasn't fought the top guys. Well, now he has fought the top guys, and he performed like that. So people know that he's, like, legit now.
For sure.
So a lot of people are going to respect that.
Mm. And so is he 19 or 20?
I think he's 22.
22, there you go. A little bit older than I thought. But still, 22 is young, man. Like, imagine that. Imagine him in, like, 4 or 5 years. And yourself, one of the questions I got was, how old are you? Because people said they can't find out anywhere online. They don't know how old you are.
I'm 25.
There you go. 25. Yeah. I can't remember who asked that question, but there you go. 25.
He's very young, but he's been boxed for a long time. So it's not surprising that he's as good as he is. And he started jiu-jitsu at, like, I think he said 10 or something like that, 10 or 12. He started jiu-jitsu. So he's been doing both of those for a long time. So, I'd expect him to be good,
well, these days, to make it to that elite level, you have to start at that kind of an age, right?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Maybe definitely
even,
helps.
Like, maybe even in 10 years' time, you needed to start when you were 5. Like, I don't think there's going to be many 15-year-olds that start 15, 16, and then in 10 years' time are fighting in the UFC. Like, I think it needs to be almost like a lifelong thing these days, because it's getting to such a high level.
Well, even in boxing, like, look at it now. Like, everybody that's – or not everybody, because I'm about to say Deontay Wilder's the exception, right? Everybody starts super young, and they grow up in, like, amateur boxing, go to the Olympics, and then they make their pro run. That's typically the model. And then you have these freaks like Deontay Wilder that step out of the model. So I think very soon MMA is going to be the same thing. You're going to have these guys starting at 4, 5, 6 years old, growing up in it, and then – they're the guys that are going to be the champions and the tip of the spear. And then you'll have, some random freak that starts at 25 and is in, like, Francis Ngannou or something, that's still the champ of the division because he's a freak athlete. But
Sound like you're a massive fan of the UFC then, and just MMA in general?
I'm a fan of all fighting. I used to not really follow boxing. I didn't really follow it. But the more I got into MMA and the UFC, the more I got into boxing, the more I got into Muay Thai, the more I got into jiu-jitsu and wrestling. And yeah, I watch a lot of random stuff.
What's your favorite art to actually study and train?
Probably boxing. I don't know what it is, but some of the stuff really good boxers do, like the reads they make and it's hard to put into words. It's just so beautiful to watch. Like, I think one of my favorite moments is Gervonta Davis recently fighting, I forget his name. And he gets hit with the rear left hand 3 times in a row, inside slips and throws this ridiculous uppercut from hell. Right. Like, the amount of skill that's required to do something like that, it's mind-boggling. Yeah, it was, yeah. So
Gervonta Davis, right?
Gervonta Davis,
I've been following for ages on Instagram. I didn't watch that fight, but obviously the knockout went viral, so I definitely remember seeing that. He's
a scary man.
Yeah. So speaking of boxing, what are your thoughts about the Logan Paul Mayweather fight and just all the YouTube stuff that's happening with, like, Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley, and just that sort of a thing?
I don't like it very much. I like seeing good boxers fight good boxers. And it hurts me. It feels like when Jake Paul beat Ben Askren, I mean, I know Ben Askren's not a boxer, but, like, felt like it almost delegitimized MMA and boxing for me. Like, it was hard to watch.
Mm.
I feel like I need to protect the sport, and I don't think that's good for the sport. There's no winning in that for the guys except for getting money, I guess. That's the upside. But there's no winning for us, like, combat athletes. And Jake Paul is a looks like he's an okay boxer, but still, he's, yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah, nah. I have mixed feelings on it as well, especially when you see, you know, the kind of money they're earning, like both of those fights we're referring to. And then you see guys like, and I don't want to talk about, you know, your future boss too badly. You shouldn't, you know, you should keep your head on a swivel here. Don't say anything out of line, mate. But, you know, Dana White going backwards and forwards with it, and John Jones and Francis Ngannou, obviously they're talking about that fight, and John Jones wants $10 million and Dana White thinks it's ridiculous. Meanwhile, you know, Logan Paul made $20 million on the weekend for like his third or fourth fight or something. And I understand, like, you know, it is entertainment, and he's fighting someone like Mayweather, where and Paul himself is a massive star and a massive entertainer, and like the numbers at the end of the day, the amount of people who pay to watch it is what's going to determine how much you earn. So I get that, but I also see your perspective on like the you know, the combat sports, and it legitimizes it or doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Delegitimizes it, I should say. Yeah. It's a tough one, right?
It is. Yeah. But I'm a sucker. I keep watching it. So
same. I tell you what, I haven't paid a fucking cent for any of those fights. I buy pretty much every pay-per-view. If I'm not at a pub watching the pay-per-view cards for the UFC with mates, I'll be paying it. I'll pay for it and watch it on my own. I pay for Fight Pass every month, but I'm not paying for that. I'm like,
nah, 100%.
They're not having my money. The stream I was on had like 180,000 people on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you still made 20 million.
I know. Some of the numbers they say that they made off pay-per-views is ridiculous. I don't know whether to believe it or not, because there's nobody coming out. Like, it's not ESPN coming out or whoever it is, the Showtime Sports, saying we sold this many pay-per-views. It's Jake Paul saying, well, we sold 5 million pay-per-views. It's like, I don't know how much to believe, but obviously there's enough money there to have it make a lot of money.
It's probably like a third of what he says it is, you know, like that's because you need to create that bubble of like the idea that it's that
big. Yeah, 100%.
I'm sure business. They definitely sold a lot of pay-per-views to make that kind of money. There's no way that they didn't, but 5 million, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk to me a little bit about your just martial arts in general, how you started, like what sort of age were you and just the journey there? Ups and downs, so, even if you've had any highlights and things like that along the way.
Yep. So I started when I was 14. I started the freestyle martial arts. And the reason I started is because I was a big WWE fan at the time. And Brock Lesnar came over and was fighting Frank Mir for the first time. And the way they hyped that whole thing up was crazy. Like, we had to make a extra large glove size that we didn't have before because he's just so huge. And he has to cut to the 265 limit. And like, I was like, how is this guy going to beat Brock Lesnar? This guy's a monster. This Frank Mir guy, like 240, Brock Lesnar has to cut to 265. It's just, I couldn't understand how this fight was going to go Frank Mir's way. And then I watched the fight, and sure enough, Brock Lesnar's like pulverizing the dude. And then all of a sudden, he grabs his foot off the ground, does something with his foot, and then he's like, Brock Lesnar's tapping. I was like, I don't know what just happened, but I've always been a small guy my whole life, and I got to learn whatever the hell that shit was. So that's basically how I started. I went to dad and said, like, we got to find an MMA gym. So we went to this MMA gym and I rock up and they're all wearing gis and I didn't understand what was going on. So I did the class, did the warm up. Dad liked it. We learned some punches and stuff. I was like, oh, I'll stick with it for a while. And so I did. And eventually I just got really bored. It wasn't what I wanted. So I stopped.
Was it Kyokushin or something?
No, it was. So they called it MMA, but it's like, It's an amalgamation of different martial arts. So it is MMA technically, but you learn, it's more like karate. So like you'll stand there at the front, you'll do these techniques out in front. You still learn like self-defenses and all that sort of stuff. But I was going there because I wanted to fight. I wanted to do exactly what those guys were doing. And so this wasn't that. So I started going, I got bored because it wasn't what I wanted. But my dad kept going. And so he started coming home, telling me about all these great techniques he did. And I was like, where the hell was that stuff when I was there? So I ended up going back. Even though it wasn't what I wanted to do, I stuck with it. And, like, I learned heaps. Like, the coaches were really good. I learned like a lot of, like, technically in a safe environment, I learned a lot of different kicks. I learned a lot of different punches. I learned more so about how to defend myself if I was in a school altercation or like a out of the ring altercation, and it was good. But when I got to 18 years old, I was at sparring in the morning. So we did have sparring classes, and I was sparring. And this guy comes up and goes, "Oh, I've got a fight on the weekend." I was like, "What? I didn't even know that you could do that here." He goes, "Oh, I just signed up for like a sparring day at Evolution." I was like, "Oh, cool." So I went down to that, watched that, and I was like, "Dad, I'm fighting." And he goes, "You're fighting." I was like, 100%, this is what I want to do. I'm fighting. And he goes, "You don't have what it takes to be a fighter." I was like, "Dad, I'm fighting." And he goes, "All right, we're going in the backyard. Put your gloves on. We're going to find out." And so he put 3 rounds on, and we basically just punched each other. So I had to prove to my dad that I really wanted to fight and that this was something I could do. So we fought in the backyard. And at the end of the day, he comes to me and goes, "You know what? Yeah, I guess you've got what you've got, the heart or whatever it is that you need to have. If you want to fight, you can fight." So from there, I started having.
Who won that fight? Just who won that fight?
My dad beat me up.
who would win these days?
My dad had beat me up. Nothing's changed. Yeah.
Oh, so there you go. You got something you can learn from him. Keep going.
Yeah, 100%. But it was good too, because my coach was obviously teaching the martial arts. He'd done Muay Thai his whole life when he was young, and he had a lot of fights, stuff like that. But he sort of, in the way of making money and stuff, I think he sort of went, "Well, I can make more money this way." And it was sort of like his dream to open a school and stuff. So that's the avenue he went down. So when he found out that I wanted to fight, he went, "Look, I can hold pads for you and all that sort of stuff, if that's what you want to do." So he was, yeah, made time out of his day, held pads for me. And then I think on my first sparring day, all these people from the gym came down because I looked like a little shit. I would talk a lot of crap, and I thought, I was like joking most of the time, but I would say how great I was a lot. So I think people came down sort of say, "Well, let's see if he actually can do what he says, and let's see if he gets beat up, whatever." And I had 2 fights on that first day, and I won them both. And yeah, from there, we just sort of got the ball rolling. We had Muay Thai fights, had jiu-jitsu, comps, all that sort of stuff. And yeah, just kept going. I wanted to have at least 10 amateur fights before I went pro. But back in those days, there was no cage legal in Perth. Nobody was really doing MMA. And almost nobody near my weight. So I had 3 amateur fights, 2 against the same person, 1 for a state title on ISKA. And then I had nobody else to fight. And they were like, "Well, we have a pro that you could fight." And the pro ended up being the same guy I won the title off as an amateur. I was like, "Well, I guess I'm going pro then." So yeah, I had 3 amateur fights. I had some Muay Thai fights there too, but 3 MMA fights, and then I went pro. And yeah, that's how the journey sort of started and how it's going. Yeah.
There you go. So far, so good, right? What's the support been like? You know, I know obviously you have your close friends and things like that that are probably very supportive, but have you also found a mix of people who, like, even maybe close to yourself, that, like, you know, people are supportive, but then there's other people that hang around, but you can kind of, as you get older, you realize, like, "Oh, maybe they're not really as supportive as I thought they were." Like, how what's that kind of experience been like?
I think I'm pretty lucky in the fact that the gym that we're at isn't what, like, if you went to Scrappy MMA, you'd know they're an MMA gym, right? Yeah. That's what they do. You come to Wilkes, we have the kids' martial arts side, so everybody gets to see all the gis and stuff like that. I think that puts a lot of people off. And then we have this small fight team out the back to all dedicated dudes and stuff. And we have this certain culture back there that's not really, I mean, there are some gyms that have a good culture. I think Scrappy is one of them. That's not what I was saying, but that is an MMA gym.
Whereas yeah, no, I understand.
More like a martial arts gym. Yeah. Ours is more like a martial arts gym. So we don't get that many people coming in going, "Oh, I want to fight," sort of thing. Yeah. And because of that, I don't really have that many people coming in that just want to hang off me because they know who I am through fighting and stuff. Because most people that come to the gym have no idea about MMA. Most of the people at the gym, especially on the martial arts side, don't know I fight, because I don't really talk about it very much. It's just something I do and they don't get to see it. So yeah, I don't really have that problem. I have a lot of people that are very supportive of me, very close to me. And I have some people that are supportive of me, but probably wish I did something else. That's part and parcel of fighting. It's not what you want to see somebody that you care about do, get punched in the face all the time.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
I understand. I know you're all in on this and this is what you want to do with your life, but have you considered at all what else you would like to do, say when it's all said and done, or if you weren't fighting, do you have any other interests you'd like to follow, like a career of any sort?
I don't really know. When I was young, I always wanted to be in like animal conservation and stuff. I don't know why, just like Steve Irwin and stuff. I always wanted to go out and help animals, I guess. So that could be something maybe, but yeah, I don't know. I really don't. It's just everything's on fighting at the moment.
What about being I know you're instructing, right? Would you be interested in having your own academy and teaching full time at all?
I may be teaching, but I don't think I'd have my own academy. If I was going to instruct, I think I'd do it out of Whoops, sort of give back to the amount of stuff he's done for me. But there's also the possibility I get to the end and I'm sick of everything and decide that I don't want to do anything to do with martial arts ever again. I have no idea.
If that's the case, let's hope you make a lifetime's money, you know, over a short period of time, and you can do whatever the fuck you want to do with your life.
Well, I'm sure I'll find something. When fighting's over, I'm sure I'll find something.
Yeah. So I know you're you are instructing, right? Do you teach kids classes? Do you enjoy that? What sort of classes are you teaching, and what do you get out of that?
So the majority of the classes I teach are the kids' martial arts classes. Nice. I enjoy it. There's something cool about like kids soak stuff up so fast. So you'll show a kid like an armbar, let's say, and then you watch their round the next round, and they're hitting this perfect armbar over and over again. It's like, oh man, like that's so cool. Like I showed him that and he's doing it. It's cool to see that. I don't know, just fulfilling, I guess. I don't know how to explain it, but
sure.
I do enjoy teaching them. I've had parents come up to me and I can see how invested they are and thankful they are for like me to be not just helping the kids, but like being a role model for the kids and see what it means to them too. So like in that facet, it's pretty cool too. So it sort of makes me try to better myself always and not be too stupid, I guess.
Yeah. Do you enjoy seeing do you pay attention to seeing the kids change and like their confidence grow and them come out of their shell and things like that? Cause I know there's a lot of kids who, you know, you get your alpha male type athlete who comes in and are naturally good at it and stuff like that. But then you also have kids who are struggling, whether it's socially at school, getting bullied and all these things, they start martial arts and you really just see them change as people. You see much of that yourself? And maybe that was you when you started.
It's like, you know, if you live with somebody, like you have a sister and then they're 5 years old, so they're 4 foot nothing, and then you never notice that they actually grow and they're almost taller than you. Does that make sense? It's the same with kids.
I have a sister who's 5 years younger than me and now she's almost just as tall as me. So yeah, I understand how it is.
So it's very similar because you get to see them so often. So I get to see the kids and they are shy and you almost don't notice that they're developing and growing. And then one day you look at them and they do something and you're like, when did you get like grown up? When did you get like that? It's like, it's very similar to what I just said before. You don't notice it straight away. And then all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, you're like, oh, wow, when did that happen? Sort of thing. And that is really cool to see. There's a kid in the gym called Louis and he wanted to do MMA for ages. And he was this tiny little kid. And relatively recently, he's grown up and doing it the whole time. And he's given me some hard goes and stuff. And like, he seems very mature. I was like, when did this happen? Like, when did you get so grown up? It's like so weird to see. And it's like cool to see. And it's crazy.
Yeah, you have impacts on people, man. Like that kid will never forget who you are. You know, especially when you start, people, when they find a passion and you're kind of like an influence in that at the beginning, it'll stay with him for sure. So, What about yourself? Has martial arts sort of changed you at all? How has it helped you in your life?
Yeah.
Wow. Or were you always just little cocky shit?
I was always a cocky shit, but I was like, I was nervous with like introducing myself to people, and I showed the cocky shit, but I wasn't a cocky shit, if you know what I mean. Like, it was sort of like I did that because I wanted to appear like I was cool or whatever the case may be. I was always nervous to approach people. I didn't know what to say. Like, yeah, I wasn't actually very confident, but I definitely feel more confident now, like through martial arts. And I think, I don't know if it's actually the martial arts or just being in a gym surrounded by people all the time and you have to meet all these new people or what it is, but I definitely feel more confident like interacting and being a part of whatever I'm a part of. Like, it's definitely made me a more confident person.
Mm. I think it was a combination of, yeah, for me personally, you know, both of those aspects, being around people, also like, you know, learning self-defense and martial arts in general. But I think part of it's like jiu-jitsu especially. I don't do much striking, but jiu-jitsu for me, like the pressure you take and your ability to like be resilient, you know, and not break, even when you just like, when you start out and you get gassed in like 2 minutes or whatever, and then eventually it gets to the point where you can have someone really give you like heavy pressure for 5 minutes. And even though you can't get out and you're pretty much getting pinned and mauled, you're like internally, man, you're like just calm and you just take the beating, and it's like, it is what it is. And it just like kind of like round that, like the edge just gets worn off.
It makes a lot of things outside of it seem less stressful because, yeah, you are used to such a high stress environment. The other things like, oh, sort of roll off your back now.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
There you go. So, I enjoy hearing things like that from people because I think it resonates like with me personally, but for sure with a lot of my listeners as well. Yeah. Like, I always get a lot of people hit me up and say, you know, they'll touch on something that someone said on the podcast and they relate to it or something. So I always enjoy hearing feedback like that too, because I know martial arts are so good for people. And I hope that someone one day like hears stories like this and they've never done martial arts before. And maybe they hear your story and then they get interested in it. And maybe it's what gives them the little light bulb moment to give it a crack.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's, what do you reckon, mate? I know there's a fight coming up on the weekend, right? You're going to be tuning in to watch Adesanya Vettori. What's the
100%? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to talk me through the card? I want to know what you think about the main fights. Like, so the Nate Diaz, Edwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who do you start? Think?
I think,
give me your views.
I want Nate Diaz to win. I really like Nate Diaz. I think everybody does. I think Leon Edwards will be too much for him. I think you'll probably stop him in the first three. But that being said, if it goes the full five, I'll put my money on Nate Diaz. I think he's going to finish. Like, he finishes so strong. He's so fit. But I just find it unlikely he's going to go all five. So Leon Edwards is my pick for that one. Figueiredo versus Moreno. I think Figueiredo will win. I think that was Moreno's best possible performance. And obviously, the power difference is phenomenal. I think Figueiredo is going to knock him out. I can't see him surviving this time, but they're both great fighters, so it'll be interesting to watch. If it goes five, it'll be a barn burner for sure, but I just think it'll end early.
I think Figueiredo, I chose Moreno, but I'm a fan of Figgy, and I feel like if he does win, man, he could reign as flyweight.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe you should just hold off on going into the UFC. You know, would you want to fight against someone like that, or would you just be like,
100%?
He's got to be a bantamweight. Go up.
If he's in my division, I definitely want to fight that dude. Like, I said it the other night, like, I can't stand the fact that people, that's not how I want to say it. I don't like people thinking they're better than me. And if they do, I want to find out who's better. That makes sense. So obviously I'm not on his radar, but he thinks he's the best in the world. Well, I think I can be the best in the world. I think I will be the best in the world. So we're going to find out one way or the other. And hopefully he's still there by the time I get there, because I'd love to be the guy to take him out.
Yeah.
But he's definitely a scary dude for sure.
Yeah. And how about the main event?
I'm a very big fan of Adesanya, so I think he'll win. Everybody says how close the first fight was, but I didn't think it was that close. Like, you got the takedown in the last round, but I thought everything else was very clearly Adesanya.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think Adesanya is going to win, and I think it's going to be pretty comfortable.
I hope so. I'm thinking it could end up, it could be like a Paulo Costa type win.
Definitely a possibility. Yeah.
But obviously, yeah, the threat of the takedown and that sort of like top control, and Vettori from the top is very aggressive.
Yeah.
You know, if you watch
You go.
I was going to say, if you watch his takedowns from the top, he's very aggressive, but, and he also like just snatch on submissions from just wherever. And sometimes maybe it's not, the control's not there, but he's just sort of like, if you leave your neck, he'll attack it straight away. So there's always something to think about.
Yeah. And I didn't really like the way Adesanya did frame and stuff like that on the bottom when he was there against Vettori. So it's definitely a possibility that, Vettori snatches something up as he's trying to get up in a way that I don't think was super, super pristine.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And so if you think about the next card coming up, so the McGregor-Poirier fight, are you interested in that?
Yeah, I think McGregor's going to win. I thought McGregor looked better, but the calf kicks were a factor. And, I mean, there could be a factor again, but I don't know why. I've always been a McGregor fan. I know he's a bit of a dick and all that stuff, but I just love the way he fights so much. It's
me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
On both accounts. He's a bit of a dick, but I still fucking love him, mate.
Yeah.
I think that's how everyone feels, man. I think even the Irish feel that way.
Yeah, probably. It's a bit much for him.
There you go. So let me I'll grab the phone out if that's all right, and I'll ask you a few of the questions that I've been given from people. Some of them will make sense to you. So there you go. Okay. I can elaborate. So I messaged, you know how I said there was a guy who asked about the after the cage antics?
Yeah.
So I'll read it out to you. Okay. So I'll start with that one. See what you got to say, and then I'll tell you what the other guy, what he said. So what happened outside the cage after the main event?
Okay, so there was a brawl between, I assume, Cody Haddon fans and Usyk fans, because it was pretty crazy out there. So that's all I know. I don't know exactly what happened, but there was definitely a brawl, and the cops and stuff had to break it up.
There you go, and that was from Shaq Ratchet. That's his Instagram handle.
Okay.
And then so he, I don't know, Jordan Hooper. Jordan Hopper, sorry. Sorry, Jordan. He goes, right after Usyk's amazing win, there was a big commotion cage side that ended in a few arrests. I wonder if it was off the back of the result. Looked very close to both teams' cage side. There you go. Yeah, I thought I'd clarify that with you because I didn't really know what the context was of that question, as I mentioned before the podcast. Don't really want to create like drama and shit. I'm not interested in that. That's not what this is
for.
So I've got a couple here from Jamil from you. You know Jamil.
Sure
from
do.
Gladiators. He's training at AMA. He's from Sustainable Jiu-Jitsu. He's brown belt there. So benefits of training freestyle wrestling.
So I can't remember who said it, but somebody was talking about it's very important to find something in whatever sport you do, find something that is harder than the sport you are currently doing. So that's why a lot of like basketballers do MMA or boxing and stuff like that to help train. Doing wrestling, not only is there the obvious technical benefits, but wrestling is so much harder than MMA, like physically, like a three minute wrestle is exhausting. To get through like a proper tournament with good guys, you're going to be exhausted very quickly and you have to recover and then go again and you're exhausted. So it's good mentally. And obviously there's the technical benefits of you actually fighting in MMA, which wrestling requires.
For sure. There you go. So private training, same again from Jamil, private training. Do you do it?
As in, do I teach private training or do I go and do privates with other people?
I'm pretty confident you do privates with other people, right?
So I teach privates. I do teach privates, yes.
Yeah, so he teaches privates and he gets privates. There you go.
Exactly. <I love it.
laughs> Favorite, same again from Jamil. So who are your favorite fighters you're watching when you're growing up or even today? Like, who do you like to watch?
So Jose Aldo.
Can be any sport.
Okay.
Just touch on a few from each if you like.
Yeah, okay. Jose Aldo, GSP, Matt Hughes. They'd be up there with my favorite fighters of all time. Obviously, Muhammad Ali would be a big one. Roy Jones Jr., Floyd Mayweather. Michael Jordan is a big one. Ben Cousins.
Hey, there you go.
Favorite athletes, yeah.
Benny Cousins, boy. Yeah. Show some respect. There we go.
100%.
And so I was going to say, what about now in the UFC? What sort of fighters are you into right now outside of Jose Aldo, who you've mentioned already?
Obviously, I like Conor McGregor. I like Adesanya, Robert Whittaker.
Hey.
Obviously, there's a soft spot for all the, like, the Australian New Zealand guys. But I like people that like push the pace, and I don't care if it's grappling, wrestling. Like, I love Khabib. I don't care what it is, but I like people that are trying to actively finish their opponents all the time. I don't like people that are happy just sitting back and.
Speaking like that, I used to not really be a fan of Kamaru Usman for that exact reason.
Yeah.
And now he's just finishing dudes, and I'm like, okay, maybe I like tuning into his fights now, that's for sure.
Yeah. That's the reason I don't really like Tyron Woodley very much. Just because, he did knock out a lot of people, but a lot of his fights were him sitting on his back to the cage and that being his so-called game plan until he could land a strike. And I mean, I don't like that at all. I prefer you make something happen. I know it's a game plan and everything, but I just don't like it.
And speaking of Adesanya, he's one of my favorite fighters as well. And I've been like low key trying to get him on the podcast. He's one of the dream guests, man. It's gonna happen. I don't know how long it's gonna take, but I'll do 150 episodes at some point in time. He'll go, you know what? This kid deserves an hour of my time. I'll give it to him.
I hope that happens for you. That'll be very exciting.
Thank you, mate. Yeah, I hope so too. So moving on, I got a couple more if that's right. You still got time?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So I've got a question here from Ewan Davies, I think, _.
Okay.
And it is expectation versus reality on what it was like fighting Cody and that war that they had. Amazing to see live. Thanks for your question, mate.
The expectation was 3 rounds. I thought the stand-up would be relatively close, but I would edge it out with kicks and stuff like that. I'd take him down and control him on the ground. And then late in the third, I thought I was going to, he was going to be tired, and I'd slowly either hit a guillotine, a choke, something like that, and finish him. And obviously reality was we were both exhausted. I couldn't get anything going after the first round, basically. And it just became sort of a little bit of luck and a little bit of who wanted it more.
There you go. Good answer, mate. Honest as well. And I appreciated you saying before that you had self-doubt and things like that during the fight.
Yeah.
To share that, shows a lot about yourself. And I think maybe even Cody as well would have had the same. I mean, I can't say for sure, but I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
Another one from Alex Snadden.
Oh, yeah.
Alex Snadden. I think I fucking know that bloke, man.
Yeah.
I think so. I know him. I think I know him from footy. Yeah. Did you play AFL?
I know he plays cricket now. I don't know if he played AFL, but he plays cricket, that's for sure.
I might know him, eh? Is it true he was munching on oily fish and chips at Optus the week before the fight?
yes. You know the answer to that one, mate. The answer is yes. You're going to live it up if you're a bantamweight. I didn't need to cut any weight. You may as well eat the carbs. Enjoy it.
There you go. Last time, that's true. Hey, because you're going up a weight class, so you just need to put weight on.
Exactly.
Last time I went to Optus Stadium, I had the fish there. I had the fish and chips there, and it was dog shit. Yeah. So how was it for you?
I actually had the chicken, so it wasn't fish, but I don't know what the fish was like. The chicken was good though. I enjoyed it.
All right, there you go. And it was Flash in the Pan who said, "What's his age?" It's listed nowhere. 25, mate. 25. I got one from Jezza, who I used to train with at Kaizen, I think.
Yep.
How you going, mate? Mindset going into the third round. Did you feel Cody had the momentum? That's a good question.
It's a good question. I do not, even though he won the second round, I thought that I could see him starting to fade, if that makes sense. Like, he started looking a little bit more tired, and I could see that. So I felt like, I don't know, that just energized me. I felt like I had the momentum going in. Even though he won the round, I felt like I was about to take it.
Do you think he felt the same way about you looking tired? Because in the second round, the commentators were saying that you were fading.
Yes, 100%. I imagine he looked at me and thought exactly the same thing. But, you sometimes need to lie to yourself to get the confidence to do something.
Mate, whatever it takes to get the win, hey? did you keep your guards up, Jamie Snow?
You know I didn't. You know I didn't get my guards up. I think they're next to my hips.
The arms were tired, mate. He's told us. Spent the last hour talking about it.
To be honest, my arms would have been down anyway. I'm not exactly a big guard person.
Yeah, fair enough. And the last one's from, I think it's Chazzy Worldwide. Steve, how much do you miss training with Chaz?
Honestly, I haven't had anybody that was as good with the fifth hook as Chaz was. Chaz hasn't been around for a while, but that's his claim to fame, I think. He used to talk about his fifth hook a lot, so...
There you go. Let's wrap it up in a minute, but I did want to ask you. So obviously you've had this fight now. You're the flyweight title. You're the flyweight champion. I'm sure the bantamweight's title is probably something that you'll be able to challenge for if you want. Is that what you want to do at Eternal right now? Or do you want to defend your flyweight? 100%. What are you looking to do?
I think it's more likely that he comes down first because he asked for it first, if Eternal allow him to. But obviously I would also like his title. So if we can make it happen where we meet at a certain weight and we defend both of them, if we have him come to me and then I have come to him after.
Clarify who you're talking about.
Sean Etchell. So Sean Etchell's the current bantamweight champ. He, after his fight, called me out, calling me a weasel. I don't really find it that insulting, but that's what it is. He messaged me a couple times and then, like, to insult me, and then I messaged back and he didn't really message again, and then he wished me luck and then he called me a weasel again. So I don't know what the going on with his persona he's a bit of a mystery to me at the moment, but I definitely like to fight that guy.
Was that the did that happen during the podcast? Someone walked up and in the middle of, at the table, is that guy, or was that a different
That's different. So Jack Jenkins, I think, was talking to Springbok Van Heerden. Straight after Sean Etchell's fight, in the post-fight speech, he calls me a weasel and then he wants his belt back and all that sort of stuff. So, it was quite entertaining.
Right, there you go. Well, so that might be the fight, right? So it's either going to be at flyweight or at bantamweight. So you're either going to fight for the double champ, be a champ, or you're going to defend your title. And do you already feel like that was a title defense against Cody? Does it feel like that?
No, it wasn't five rounds.
Oh, yeah, true. No. That's true. Yeah. Good answer. nothing comes that easy, huh? Got to be. Imagine that fight.
Exactly.
Imagine that fight.
I know. Imagine what's going to happen the last two.
Yeah, fuck. End of the fourth round, you just look at each other and go, let's just call it a draw.
Yeah. Call timeout. Yeah.
All right. And so, pending things go well, how many fights do you think you need to get into the UFC from here? And like, what's the sort of, how are you going about that? Do you have anyone talking to you? Or you just got to literally keep fighting?
So I think I'm one or two fights away. I have a manager, Rival Sports Management, and they're talking to those guys. And so hopefully I hear something about it. But if I don't, keep plodding along and eventually make it happen.
Yeah. So if you don't get a fight straight up, you might end up Dana White's contender series or something like that.
Yeah, whatever comes up. Yeah.
And I think you're in the right place to make that happen as well.
Yeah. Well, I think Eternal's by far the best promotion at the moment. So if I can't do it here, I don't know where else I would be able to do it.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Stephen, I appreciate your time, mate. Thank you for coming on the podcast, giving me just over an hour of your time. I really appreciate that. You didn't have to. Pleasure to chat to you, mate. And look, next time you jump in the cage, I'll be gone for you. I promise you that.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on as well.
No worries. You're welcome, mate. I'll see you later. Bye.